This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to Always the Last to Know. I'm Katie. And for this week only, you're getting just me. Ashley's dog, Chalupa, our beloved little mascot, had some medical emergencies. Fortunately, he's totally fine. He's on some heart meds for the rest of his life, and we're so thrilled that Ashley was able to pick him up. But that did mean that most of her emotional energy and time has gone into taking care of her beloved dog. So we're going to get something a little bit different today. Last week, we promised that we'd be getting back into our normal routine, and we were fully ready to do so. I have my notes ready to talk about simulation hypothesis. But that's not really a conversation that you can have alone, and it's something that really requires a lot of other perspectives. I didn't have any other notes ready, and I wasn't going to give you guys a half-assed research topic because you truly deserve so much more. So this week, I'm going to be reading you guys my experience and some other people's creepy experiences with something that's known as the glitch. What? A glitch in the Matrix. Glitches in the Matrix revolve around the idea of people's beliefs that we are living in a computer simulation, a simulated reality that is controlled by another being. And we're going to get into what that is and that topic and the philosophical and scientific discussion of that next week. This week, I'm going to be telling you guys some stories. We apologize that this isn't our usual content. Hopefully it's still entertaining though. To understand simulation theory a little bit more, here is a story from the subreddit No Sleep, written by user Unpatriotic, and it's called The Life in the Machine. Being a programmer, one of my dreams has always been to create an original video game, something that nobody in the industry has done before. After seeing Spore, I became intrigued. Here was an attempt at putting people in control over a universe. After looking at what made video games popular, I realized the main aspect was control. People in their daily lives have no control over their environment. They are told what to do, where to go, and how to live. Their jobs consist of standing or sitting somewhere until it's 5 p.m., and they're allowed to head back home. It's no mystery they're unhappy. For many people, video games are an escape to a world where they are in control, or live exciting fake lives filled with adventure. The aspect of control is found in strategy games, the adventure in role-playing games generally. I looked at games like The Sims and noticed what made them so popular is not just the illusion of control, but the degree of control. You have complete control over other people's lives. Before The Sim, there was Sim Earth, a game in which you do not control individual people, but an entire Earth. I came to the conclusion that I had to develop a game similar to Spore, in which the player subtly guides evolution. But what caused Spore to be such a failure is the lack of realistic control people had. It hardly resembled evolution. To do this, I began by generating a physics system. I know little of physics, but decided to study it and tried to create a simplified version in which certain particles can interact in specific manners. When it comes down to it, physics is simply complex mathematics. I simulated energy and matter and created a simple system with the sun emitting energy circled by a planet catching said energy. I decided to create simple basic cells from scratch that were hard-coded, so to speak, in the system I was designing. They lived off of the energy emitted by my sun and had a genetic code that coded for the substances produced by the cells. I guess you could call them my eukaryotes. My world, within a few minutes, would always fill with these cells, after which they would mutate, and the most efficient cell in converting energy from the sun into useful substances for division would survive. It was very boring, but it worked, I guess. I decided to expand the physics systems and force the cells to create waste products that were toxic and would kill them. I noticed that some cells responded to this by producing less waste. Others responded by producing something to emit the waste, yet others developed chemicals to clean up the waste products. However, I noticed something fascinating. Running the simulation for a few centuries, a few minutes in real life, created cells that made massive amounts of specific waste products on purpose. I noticed that other cells died as a result of this, to which the other cells responded by usurping the building blocks they had created from energy. The first predators were born. With the first predators, diversity in this little world rapidly increased. Some grew a response to flee when they encountered these toxins. Others grew resistance to them. The ones that grew resistance would eventually grow to utilize the toxins' products. Eventually, I noticed something interesting. The cells that escaped from the toxin grouped up with the cells that utilized the toxins. They stayed close together and helped each other. Eventually, these types of cells would attach to one another. They formed a weird symbiosis where the cell that would normally flee would now move towards places where the toxins are, and the other cell would consume the toxins and provide the mover with some of the energy. Without going into too much detail, I became very excited and decided to let this simulation run during the morning. I had stayed up until 5 a.m. while I went to bed. When I woke up at around 11, I noticed that the world I had created had changed and was barely recognizable. Massive plant-like structures grew in this world, consumed by other organisms that ate these plants. However, looking at the log, I noticed that the world hadn't changed much in the past 2 hours or so. I had reached another stasis point, where the simplicity of my simulation prevented more complex life from evolving. I expanded the system by breaking up energy into different types with different wavelengths that were absorbed to different degrees by different molecules. I implemented vibrations in the air, created an improved simulation of weight, and made some minor tweaks. This caused the simulation to run slower, of course, but it was worth the sacrifice. I stayed around the whole day watching the simulation in excitement and playing with it, as it was incredibly addicting. Complex organisms evolved that cooperated, plants that depended on each other or attracted predators that ate the horrible-looking creatures that ate from them. I had fun and noticed that some creatures evolved warning calls. This meant that if they noticed a predator, they would issue a sound and all others of their kind would flee into holes they had dug in the earth. Others evolved mating calls. I decided to have some fun. I made a dump tool, allowing me to dump specific organisms on the earth, and I wrote my name with it. I created 10 meteorites and dumped them on a piece of land to create an island, because I wanted to see whether the animals stuck on both sides would evolve in different directions. I made a smiley island with volcanic eruptions. By that time, I realized I had stayed up until 5 a.m. again as I heard birds outside. I felt tired, and I woke up at around 1 p.m. or so. When I looked at the simulation, I felt a sense of shock. Different groups of animals of one species had made statues with stones, some in the form of a smiley, some in the form of my name. I didn't know why they were doing this or how. What I did notice was that they would attack each other from time to time. I didn't know what to do with it, but I concluded that these organisms must have somehow noticed that the smiley and the name I had written were special. The fighting disturbed me, and so I decided to create a massive mountain ridge through volcanic eruptions to separate the two groups. By this time, changes were happening fast compared to earlier. While I had to spend a night sleeping to see tribes evolve in my simulation, while I was getting something to eat or I took a bathroom break, I would notice that tribesmen wearing different styles of clothing or having changed their type of dwelling. Their numbers were also continually increasing. At some point, I noticed the creatures began making their own symbols on the ground and no longer just copying mine. Most of the symbols seemed random and unintelligible to me, but one stood out. The organisms had created a symbol that resembled them, a small circle with a square beneath it. Within the square, a dot could be found at the center. That was meant to symbolize the visual organs of the creature, as the creature had two visual organs, one in the front of its body and one on the back. In the square, other sensory and reproductive organs were symbolized. Next to the circle, on top of the square, could have been seen as something resembling the drawing of a fork. Two of these forks had been painted in the opposite direction, and next to that, a smiley face could be seen. I realized something. They were not communicating towards each other. They were trying to communicate to something out there. My meddling in their landscape had somehow made them realize that something powerful was out there, capable of changing their world. I wondered whether symbols like Stonehenge and the pyramids in my own world could be signs of primitive people trying to do the same thing, begging their creator or overseer to initiate contact with them. However, one thing was undeniable by now. These creatures realized that there was something out there. I wondered for a long time, did I have a responsibility to initiate contact with something that isn't real? Or are these creatures real in a different way? Can something be real merely by being capable of having a concept of itself? And even if they are real, does that mean that they will be better off with me initiating contact with them? Should I change my simulation to ensure them permanent happiness? And is that even possible for me to do? I did not want to confirm my existence to them, but I did want to be able to communicate with them. I decided to program a prophet, an organism that looks like them and cannot be proven by them to be different from themselves, but is fully controlled by me. I let it be born into a powerful position as the son of a leader. I decided to lead by example and seek to teach these creatures English so I could communicate with them. As a prophet, I instructed to them that English was the language we could use to communicate with the greater one. They would have no way to be sure if it was true or not. I hadn't made up my mind yet about whether I would reveal myself or not, but I did want to be capable of understanding what they wanted to tell me. In a few generations, they all spoke English. And rapidly, signs began emerging on the ground in English. Guide us. Show us your greatness. Help us. And during times of disease or hunger or general misery, give us food, show us a miracle, end our suffering. I decided that I couldn't maintain a world with such suffering as emerged in the simulation without intervening. Why would I accept a world with death and rape and murder if I could make one without it? As I implemented fixes that were gradual, so they could not be proven to be miraculous, murder and rape would over the years become more rare, and so would death at a young age. I figured that they wouldn't notice if it happened over generations, but they did. Thank you. All blessings be upon the greatest. We love you. And the most heartbreaking. Come back to us. Tears ran over my face. There is something there, and it knows I am here, able to contact them, but unwilling to do so out of fear of what I have created. But I felt I had a responsibility. And so I loaded up the character I had created again, and I went to their king, asking to talk to their wisest men. But by this time, I was not believed. You are number 1341, claiming to be an avatar of the greatest one. If you are him, I pray for your forgiveness, but please show us a sign before demanding of me to gather all of our wisest men. And so I hesitated, but responded. Tomorrow, there shall be two more meteors falling on a deserted island in the sea before you on the same day. And when they do, doubt no more and realize that I have come back to repair the broken world that I created. And so I exited my avatar and progressed the simulation until the next day was reached and threw two meteors on the deserted island before the mainland, where thousands had gathered to watch whether a sign would be given. Upon the descent of the meteors, celebrations were held. All the sentient organisms gathered around the small house where I had exited my avatar and lay flat on the ground in apparent worship of the man who was last seen there and afraid of coming close. I don't know who was more afraid by now, me or them. I loaded my avatar again and exited the house. The creatures continued to lay flat on the ground in utter silence. It's as if they felt unworthy of speaking. Let your wisest man stand up, I told them, and one stood of these bizarre-looking creatures. Thank you for coming back. Pray tell us, do you have any requests of us? I hesitated before saying, there is nothing you can do for me that pleases me, but for you to be good to one another, and to contact me with your wishes and fears. The creature responded, "We know you come from a different world, and we are afraid. We understand how vulnerable we are, and how incomplete our experience is. Please, allow us to join you in the world that you created our world from." I began to cry behind my computer as I responded, "I do not know how." The creature responded, "At risk of offending you, please understand the severity of our situation. By living in a world that is incomplete, we are at constant risk of disappearing forever, never to be seen again. We would never even consciously realize that our end had come. I realize that they are unable to comprehend that I only had absolute power within their world and not outside of it. They also did not realize that my knowledge of their world was limited. I may have created it through simple laws, but those simple laws gave way to a reality of its own that's more complex than I can comprehend." I respond again, "I only have power in your world. In my world, I have no power. So I cannot bring you there because my world is not under my control. I also do not understand the world I have created. I do not know what is best for you. Only you do, and you have to inform me of what you want." The man waited for a moment. I was about to think that they were going to end communicating with me before their wisest man responded, "You have created a world that is incomplete, with creatures that cannot escape it, and you have no power to save them. They are completely unfree, and they have no power. We are completely at your mercy, and we ask you, from the deepest of our heart, end us." By now I was crying, as I was confused and asked to do the impossible. My own child was asking me to kill it. This is when I noticed the lights in my room flickering before my computer suddenly shut down. I screamed. Upon trying to turn my computer on again, I noticed it wasn't working. I called the power company, who told me due to an accident, a power surge had traveled through the grid. They promised they would pay for any damage done. I hung up and contemplated. The coincidence of what just happened was too great to be imaginable, and I wondered if these creatures were at the mercy of a confused creator, could the same be said of me? And if so, did my creator just prevent me from repeating his own mistake? Honestly, I read that story 10 years ago, and I still think about it all the time, and it's truly the best example of simulation hypothesis. We are living in that simple world, programmed by some creator. And because of that, people run into some unexplainable situations. Skeptics will justify these with anything. And honestly, I'm always open to hearing these reasons. But I do love myself a spooky glitch in the Matrix story. So here are a few I found on Reddit, and I'll end with my own. User Mark of Shame writes, "Driving home on a stormy day, I see that a side road up on a local golf course is blocked off by flashing barricades. I also spy a Mercedes, parked past from the barricades with its hazards lights on. I stop and walk up to the car to see if they need help. I'm an EMT. I shine my light in the truck to see a man slumped over, apparently asleep. Thinking I've got a few drunks, I move up to the driver window and tap on the glass and shine my light. The driver is sitting bolt upright, unmoving, staring straight ahead. My window tapping or light doesn't cause him to blink, flinch, or move. I look over and the passenger is slumped forward on the dash. This begins to creep me out. I call down to the sheriff's station and request a code 2, no lights or sirens, unit up to my location to help me check them out. The doors are locked. While I was on the phone, I walk back to my truck to go get my go bag. As I'm on the phone with dispatch, she asks me to get a license plate number for the car, as a PNG Power Company cherry picker truck comes rumbling down from the closed road. I move to go around the truck to get the plate number, and the car is gone. I talked to the driver of the truck, and he said that there was an 80-foot tree down across the road, and that he didn't think it'd be open for a day or so. The question is, where the hell did the car go? User Musical Moses writes 8 years ago. 10 years ago, I was returning home from a road trip with two friends. I received a phone call from my parents asking when we would be arriving, and I explained we were about 25 minutes away. About a minute later, we came around a bend. It was a full moon, and we could see the reflection from a lake below us, and other than the light from that, the road was completely empty. Suddenly, everything went completely dark in the car. No lights from the dash or gauges or headlights on the road. The music also stopped and restarted at the beginning of the CD we were listening to. There is now a vehicle pulled over by the police about a quarter of the mile in front of us that hadn't been there a split second before. I'd assumed I'd just dozing off for a few seconds, as it was late. I thought it was quite peculiar, though. After about a minute, the driver of the car turned the music all the way down and said, "Did that just happen to anyone else?" The other passenger in the back seat sat forward abruptly and exclaimed, "I thought I just fell asleep." When we realized that the clock in the car was reading an hour later than it had just been a minute before. To keep ourselves from freaking out, we decided that the car had possibly just a momentary electrical failure and reset the clock back to an odd time, turned off the dash lights, headlights, and gauges, and restarted the CD player. But when we arrived home 25 minutes later, we were an hour late. I'm still missing an hour of my life, and to this day, I have no idea what happened. This is a spooky one, guys. K.E.R. Wapple wrote 2 years ago, "I remember being pretty young, like 9 or 10, and I was at the car park of a pub in England. I remember seeing someone in their late teens in the window of a house looking over the car park." I think they mean parking lot. "They waved at me, and I felt like I just knew them somehow. My parents asked who I was waving at, and I just said some lady in the window over there. Didn't think much of it. Fast forward 10 years, I was at my nan's new house. I remember walking into her room, which I was never allowed to do, going to the window. I then realized I was in the house looking over that same parking lot and remembering that interaction years before. Then a girl, around 9 or 10, who was in said parking lot waved at me, and I waved back. I felt like I knew her." This one doesn't have the username listed, but here we go. "Me and my friend were at a Chinese restaurant, and we ordered a General Tso chicken dinner and a shrimp lo mein dish. When we sat down, we took out both boxes and set them on the table about 2 feet apart. My friend opens the first box, and we see shrimp lo mein dish. That's all the things in there. Noodles, shrimp, fried rice. He closes the box and opens the other box. Inside that is another shrimp lo mein dish. Shrimp, noodles, fried rice. Oh, I think. They must have mixed up the order. I was just about to say this when my friend said out loud, 'Looks like they made a mistake and gave us two,' as he opens up the first box again. Inside of the box was a General Tso chicken dinner order. The chicken, white rice, and an egg roll. He froze and looked at me. I looked back at him, and we sat in silence. It took us 5 minutes or so to collect ourselves. I have no idea what the fuck happened." And here is my weird, unexplainable story that my friends and I still don't understand. It was the summer of 2018. Every Tuesday, my best friends and I in Maine would go hiking. We used the app All Trails to guide us, especially because you could download the maps offline. So if you didn't have service, you always knew where you were going. We never had any issues until one random Tuesday in June. When we first pulled up to the hike, the entrance trail was littered with missing person signs. Naturally, I joked that that was not good and we should probably go somewhere else. The trail was only supposed to be about 2 miles, so it was going to be pretty quick, and as we walked in to the woods, everything got really quiet and heavy. We walked past this creepy abandoned maple shack with this old sign covered in like cobwebs and stuff, and it was written, like handwritten, "Be back in 5. Along the trail were angry signs about how the land had been taken from private owners and turned into public land. We all had this really weird feeling, but continued to the top. We were determined to not break our Tuesday tradition. As we continued along the trail, following all of the markers, because I'm a neurotic hiker, it would be flat, then a short, steep hill, flat, short, steep hill, all filled with angry signs from locals. Great. After our fourth or fifth steep hill, we realized that we had been hiking up for way too long for what we were expecting. We could see the top of the hill, though. So we stopped at this, like, small wooden picnic table quickly for some water and some snacks and to just kind of calibrate. Sitting on the table, and I notice to the right of me are these weird metal chains, one in each of the corners, like two of the top corners. And then right in the middle, lower to that, was another one in the exact same spots that would be needed if you were chaining someone down to a table to hold their wrists up over their head and their neck. I have a picture of this table. After that, we got really creeped out. And then we noticed a little graveyard, which, honestly, being in New England in the middle of the woods, this was pretty common to, like, stumble upon a family cemetery from the 1800s. But this one was really fucking weird and definitely much newer. So we got closer to the gravestone, and there was a sticker, like a sign, that said, like, Turtle Cemetery. And then it said, "Those who resort to extortion to gain control end up here to rest their soul." We immediately grabbed our shit and hightailed it to the top. We stopped for a second to talk and be like, what the fuck? And look at our watches, and 4 hours had passed. Not only that, but all of our phones and tracking devices and Fitbits all said we had walked for 6 miles. That didn't make any sense at all. So we just hightailed it down the path. It took us less than 45 minutes to get down. Not passing the cemetery with the picnic table or any of the local signs we saw, but all of the exact same trail markers. The following week after that hike, we all got incredibly sick. I ended up having to go to the ER to get 2 IVs for dehydration, even though at that time I was wearing and finished an entire Camelback and was constantly hydrating. Both of my friends were homesick with migraines and illness for a week. We never went back. We never found out where the time went. We don't know how we walked that many miles on what was a very clearly marked 2-mile trail. We walked up way more hills up than the way back down. We still have no idea what happened, but it was really fucking weird. Well, everyone, I hope that you enjoyed this incredibly different episode of Always the Last to Know. I promise we're going to be back next week with a full explanation of simulation hypothesis, its scientific background, what some physicists have to say about it, and we'll be back with an awesome guest who's going to have a really great perspective on this. Thank you all for your patience and your understanding, and again, thank you so much for listening. For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.